Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up over the next hour, we'll be looking back at England's win yesterday over in Kosovo. It means England finished the group with 7 wins out of 8 and secure a position amongst the top 6 seeds for next year's tournament. So we'll be reacting to that as well as looking at all the other international football. Some fixtures tonight, including the Republic of Ireland against Denmark, as well as a few home nations in action tomorrow evening. We'll be talking a little bit about Chelsea as well as Manchester United over the next hour. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. This is the Premier League Fan Show here on Love Sport. So plenty to talk about over the next hour. As I mentioned, that number again, 0208 7020 558. If you want to get in touch with us to give your views, not just on England, but your Premier League club this hour, dedicated to the Premier League clubs. And then obviously in the next hour between 2 and 3, it will be the Championship Fan Show. So one place to start, and it was over in Kosovo yesterday afternoon. England's final group stage game. Obviously, they'd already guaranteed qualification for next year's Euros after beating Montenegro 7-0 last Thursday, but an opportunity to secure their place amongst the top 6 seeds for the Euros, and obviously wanting to win the game to finish off the group in style. And they did that with the result, a 4-0 win away in Kosovo. Goals from Harry Winks, Harry Kane, Marcus Rashford, and a first England goal for Mason Mount means that England top the group, 21 points out of a possible 24. Czech Republic also go through the group despite losing to Bulgaria yesterday. Kosovo third, Bulgaria fourth, and Montenegro in last place in the group. Now, obviously, it's a good thing that England have won again, and they've secured their place not just in next year's Euros, but amongst the top seeds, which could be crucial. But not necessarily the best performance from England. Gareth Southgate has said that he believes that his side are in a better shape than before the World Cup. He did have a warning that the Euros will be no easier to win. However, there were still some concerns. The overall performance wasn't particularly good yesterday against Kosovo. Granted, I think you have to give credit to Kosovo for making it quite tough, that there are a lot of even away games in Euro qualifiers that are just so easy to win, and you go and win 6-7-0 and you wonder what really was the point of turning up. And Kosovo certainly did make it hard work. And in some ways, that's not necessarily a bad thing for England, because far too many qualifiers are way too easy. But the performance wasn't good, and it did take England a long time to really get ahead in the game. Obviously, Harry Winks gave England the lead around the half-hour mark, and it wasn't then until just before the 80-minute mark that England doubled their advantage. And it was a struggle at times for England. And I looked through the ratings both in the Times today and in the Telegraph, and I think on the whole, it's quite over-optimistic, I think, and too kind on some of the players overall. The England team averaged in the Times ratings an average of seven, around just under seven per player. And realistically worrying and a pretty much a 7 out of 10 across the board? No, they weren't. There were a couple of very good performances, a lot of very average performances yesterday, and I think there are still some concerns and many questions that we'll go on to talk about that Gareth Southgate has to establish the answers to over the next 6 to 8 months as we build up to next summer's Euros. Obviously, Harry Kane getting another goal, and incredible statistics as to how many goals he scored in every single qualifier, 12 goals in total. And there is no doubting that. The one question I would ask is what really was the point of playing Harry Kane last night? I don't really understand the reason as to play him. England had already qualified, and the likelihood of England falling behind the Czech Republic, and in the end, obviously we didn't know this before the game started, but the Czech Republic lost anyway. So England, in theory, the result wasn't necessarily the be-all and end-all. It wasn't paramount that England won yesterday. And we know what Harry Kane's going to give you. So you're not really learning anything new about this side. I think it would have been a really good opportunity to potentially start someone like Tammy Abraham, scored his first England goal off the bench against Montenegro. This could have been a good opportunity to test him. He's in good form for Chelsea, for his club. Why not reward him with a start for England? Because you already know Harry Kane is a known quantity. Tammy Abraham at international level is an unknown quantity. So I think it would have been a good start. I get the sense now, all strikers have to be selfish. Of course they do, because that's why they score so many goals. But I get the sense at times, and if you remember back to a game he played for his club against Stoke, if my memory serves me correctly, Christian Eriksen scored a goal in that game. I think it may have been 1-0 in that game. And Harry Kane was so adamant that it be given to him. They pushed and pushed for it to be given. And eventually they did give it to Harry Kane. And I sort of thought then, yes, all strikers are going to have that selfish streak in them, but that's quite self-centred to just want the goal for yourself, not for your teammate. And I just think yesterday, Harry Kane, I know statistics will drive players, and that's not a bad thing, but I just get the feeling that Harry Kane is so motivated by just the numbers and by his own personal statistics that's kind of, it's hindering Gareth Southgate, because at times over the last couple of years, Harry Kane should have been substituted in games, but it's as if he's undroppable or unsubstitutable, if that's even a word, that it's not even something that Gareth Southgate would even consider because it's Harry Kane. And I just think yesterday was the perfect opportunity to try someone like Tammy Abraham or Callum Wilson instead of going with Harry Kane. We know what Harry Kane's going to give you. It's a world-class, lethal centre-forward. But I just get the feeling that his personal motivation to score more goals for his statistics, that perhaps affected the decision. Another player that did struggle yesterday, one of a number, to be fair, was Declan Rice. And I just get the feeling, is he going slightly backwards in his career? You think back to 12 months ago, his stock couldn't really be much higher. He's being linked with Manchester City, he was being linked with Manchester United, and people were saying he needs to stay at West Ham for a couple more seasons to help nurture that development. It feels like he's gone slightly backwards. I've always thought he's good at what he does in terms of being a holding midfielder, but the doubt I have about him going on to that next level, to becoming a world-class player or a player that can play at the top level in Champions League football, is his ability on the ball, his distribution that you see from the top, the best holding midfielders. Yes, they're very good at reading play, intercepting, tackling in the defensive part. They're able to dictate play from that anchor role just in front of the back four. And I just have doubts. Declan Rice is still very young, so he's got the time to potentially develop that. He's only 20, so it may be a little bit harsh, but it just feels like he's plateauing a little bit in his career, and maybe, who knows whether that's just a little phase that he's going through, but he is still 20, so I think we can forgive him for that. So the biggest questions going into the Euros next year, and these are the crucial next 6 to 8 months before the Euros start. And so often we've headed into major tournaments not knowing our best 11, and not knowing who features in our best defence, who features in the best midfield. The crucial thing, there aren't that many games actually between now and the start of the Euros, but that's one of the key things Gareth Southgate has got to establish. he has got to establish who are going to be his two centre-backs, because quite clearly he's going to go with a back four, even though at the beginning of his reign he was toying with the idea of a back three. But it seems like he's going to go with a back four. He has to establish, it does feel like Harry Maguire is going to be a definite at centre-back. Who is going to be that partner alongside him? Who's going to be the goalkeeper? Because I still believe Nick Pope's a better goalkeeper than Jordan Pickford, but I think it's very unlikely that Gareth Southgate will go down a different path. Who's going to be in the midfield three? I think that's where the biggest questions are, even though England's biggest issue at the moment is defensively, and the fact that they do look quite frail, quite fragile defensively. Actually, the combination of the midfield is crucially important. England have got quite a number of midfielders to choose from. It's about picking the right balance to the midfield. It isn't just a case of picking your three best players necessarily. It's about picking what suits them best also against opponents. Because when we get to the Euros, we're not going to be playing Montenegro. We're not going to be playing the Czech Republic. We're not going to be playing Bulgaria. You look at the qualifiers so far: Austria, Belgium, Croatia, Czech Republic, England, Finland, France, Germany, Holland, Italy, Poland, Portugal, Russia, Spain, Sweden, Turkey and Ukraine in there. Against the better sides, England need to really think hard about what their best midfield is and who's going to play together. Do they need to go with two defensively minded midfielders against the best sides, the Frances of the world, the Hollands? Do they need to potentially go a little bit more defensive minded in those games, but against other opponents only go with one? So that's one of the key things that Gareth Southgate's got to establish, because you can't get to the beginning of a major tournament and not know who features in your best 11. That is absolutely criminal and what's hurt England so often. How will England fare against the better sides? That's one of the big questions for me, because England, for so many years, the defeat against Czech Republic was the first time England had lost a qualifier in a decade. For so many years, going back 15 years, England have just dispatched teams in the qualifying group and have just cruised through them without any trouble. But they then get to the major competition and they have a real mental block. How will they fare? Because I look at England in attack and they've got one of the best front threes in world football, in at international level. So in an attacking sense, England are absolutely fine. Defensively, though, and you've seen over the last couple of international breaks against bang average opponents, England have looked very suspect. And that's my big worry going into next year's Euros. Is it's all well and good Gareth Southgate saying we're in better shape than before the World Cup and talking about how we are better now than we were when we headed to Russia 18 months ago. But still, defensively, we look like against the top nations, I mean, against average nations with players playing kind of at the relative Championship League One level, they're causing problems for this England defence, especially on the counter-attack. England look very vulnerable to that. Against the better sides, they're not going to be given seven opportunities to score a goal, and they're not going to be able to win 5-0. They may only have two or three really good opportunities, and they might give away two or three good opportunities, which a good opposition will capitalise on. So some big questions for Gareth Southgate. Obviously, England are through. That's the most important thing. And they're also amongst the top six seeds, which could be very, very important during that tournament. But still some big questions, both in terms of team selection and also against the very best. When we hope that England are in the latter stages of next year's Euros, when they come up against the top opponents, defensively, can they hold up against those opponents? If you've got a view on that, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. We want to hear your views on England or in fact, on your Premier League club. And we're going to be talking, obviously, more about the Premier League and some of the players involved who are obviously Chelsea players. Mason Mount scored his first England goal yesterday. Tammy Abraham scored his first England goal on Thursday. Some of the other players, Callum Hudson-Odoi, did he struggle to make an impact yesterday? We'll be talking all things Chelsea next.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. We'll be talking all things Chelsea now, and also with a bit of obviously a link to the England game. Delighted to say we're joined by Nizar Kinsella, Chelsea correspondent for Goal. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Nizar. A first England goal for Mason Mount yesterday, that followed on from Tammy Abraham's on Thursday. Let's talk a little bit about Mason Mount first, Nizar. A great moment, obviously, for Mason Mount. He's made a significant impression early doors this season for Chelsea. Do you think with his performances, if he can maintain a consistency for Chelsea this season, do you think he pushes a big kind of Is there a big push potentially to have him in England's best 11 when they get to the Euros?
Yeah, definitely. I think he's definitely in contention. You know, that goal, it was a long time coming. I think he said after the game that he was unlucky not to score in 7-0 win against Montenegro. You know, offside by a fingernail for one of his attempts, and then you know, another one where he probably should have put it in, where it was an own goal. So you know, Mason Mount is always going to have that goal threat, and I think that was something that was missing from England's midfield during the last World Cup. So you know, I think Southgate's been looking at him ever since before the World Cup. You know, Southgate was talking about Mason Mount when he was at Vitesse Arnhem a long time ago, and saw that, you know, he's got unique technical ability. Southgate is somebody who has managed in the youth levels as well, so Mount's all about for a long time, and what a unique talent he is compared to other English players. You know, he's small, he's got that sort of short turning circle, very intelligent as well, well coached, can great timing in the box, as we saw with a goal, carrying a real goal threat really from midfield. Had to emulate Lampard to a certain extent, where despite having a smaller physique. So yeah, he's great. And I think that also, you know, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain's another player that's the sort of type of player that England missed in the last World Cup. So yeah, I think that it's really positive. The options are great for Southgate, and I think he feels like this could be a stronger squad than last time out.
As I mentioned, not only did Mason Mount score his first senior England goal this week, Tammy Abraham came off the bench against Montenegro, scored his. I was saying about 5 or 10 minutes ago that I would have potentially considered starting Tammy Abraham last night to test him, to see what he's made of, because he's an unknown quantity at this level rather than Harry Kane, who's very much a known quantity. Do you think that, based on his form this season, considering England had already sealed qualification, do you think that Gareth Southgate may have missed a trick by not starting, giving Tammy Abraham that opportunity last night?
Yeah, I do. And I think he deserved the start. You know, Tammy Abraham was buzzing after scoring that goal against Montenegro. You know, it's something he deserved. And you know, something he's worked hard for. He's kind of just, you know, scored so many goals in the Premier League this season. 10 goals, you know, 11 in all competitions, scored in the Champions League. He's been a brilliant player for Chelsea, and I think, you know, that's something that proved that he deserved a chance. And I think Southgate needs competition for places up front. I think, you know, it's going to be hard for, you know, Abraham to dislodge Kane unless something happens to him or his form really turns, you know, sour towards the end of the season. But I still think, you know, Abraham, he's going to have a big impact, you know, off the bench. He's just a poacher. Potentially they could play together as well. Like, Kane likes to drop into spaces deep as well, and he could operate as a bit of a number 10, whereas Abraham's very much an off-the-shoulder, high-intensity pressing type forward, and somebody who could probably complement Kane. And I know Abraham really admires Kane as well. But, yeah, I think that that game, Southgate made a mistake, and I would have played him. And I think that, you know, Hudson-Odoi got some minutes on the left, and I think that Abraham just as much needs those minutes in international duty, just to sort of find his feet at that level and just feel like a real England international.
You mentioned Callum Hudson-Odoi's name there, Nizar. He's quite clearly another of these talented young players. A statistic saying that I think 9 of the last 21 England debutants came through the Chelsea Academy. Obviously, Hudson-Odoi is another of those. He seemed to struggle yesterday on what was a tough, kind of a tough occasion, a difficult pitch to play on. He was withdrawn just before the hour mark. What do you think we've learned from Hudson-Odoi from yesterday? Was it just one of those off days, or is that the kind of reality check that he isn't going to instantaneously come onto the international scene and dominate, because it's taken, for example, it took Raheem Sterling 30 or 40 caps to really get going. Only scored a couple of goals in his first 30 odd appearances, but now, after that kind of time, 2 or 3 years in the international setup, then is much more accustomed to that level.
Yeah, I think you kind of assessed it well, but I think that you know, I think that he's a player, Hudson-Odoi, that we can get very excited about. I think we're safe to get very excited about him. He is a unique talent. He's probably the best player out of Chelsea's academy that I've seen come through. But like you said, you brought up Raheem Sterling, and he was a similarly great talent coming through. I mean, I remember Liverpool paid a huge sum to get him from QPR, and that just showed what the football world thought of him. But he still needed to put in that work. He still needed to fail at some points. And that's the same for Hudson-Odoi. Lampard's shown him some tough love this season, making sure he doesn't rest on his laurels, because he almost has so much talent that it would be easy just to fall back on that and not work as hard as he could and not quite reach the levels that he potentially can reach. So he very much needs sometimes to be, you know, taken off, to be criticised at times, and that's all fine. But really, I still think he is a talent that we should all be very excited about coming through. And he's 19 years old. He's not played 50 senior games yet. You know, we kind of forget that. And he's also ruptured his Achilles tendon in the last few months and just recovered. So he's definitely not at his best yet, even from what we've seen in the past. So yeah, he's a great talent. He's bound to struggle at this stage of his career, but yeah, let's get excited about him. And I definitely see him as somebody who's likely to be pushing for a place at the Euros and potentially have an impact, maybe more off the bench, but he could be a big player for England.
Before we talk about matters on the field for Chelsea, some interesting comments from John Obi Mikel, talking a little bit about Eden Hazard, who obviously made that big money move to Real Madrid last summer, saying that despite the fact that he has incredible talent, he is the laziest player he's ever played with. What do you make of those comments? Is that a kind of a tongue-in-cheek comment, just a bit of a kind of a joke that he didn't really try because he knew he didn't have to because he was so good? Or do you think there maybe was a point in there that maybe it turned into a little bit of arrogance, that because he knew he had lots of natural talent, he didn't try? And did that come across when he was playing for Chelsea?
Yeah, I think it's probably not as much of a surprise as you might think. I think Hazard's been criticised by each of his last few managers at Chelsea. Jose Mourinho really struggled with him at times and wanted him to track back, and he didn't. And, you know, he wanted him to train harder, but he couldn't get him to train as hard as he could. I recently saw an interview with John Terry as well, who said Hazard didn't train very well either. He said, kind of echoed Mikel's thoughts, and but he said that he would go out and get you a goal on the match day, so it's kind of hard to be angry at him. He almost got away with a little bit more than many other players would, just because he's so naturally gifted. And that's something I think that, you know, that might have held him back. He maybe could have pushed to score more goals. A lot of people thought that he could be a Messi, he could be a Ronaldo. And if he really, really trained hard, then that might have been something that took his game to another level. But Hazard's personality is also kind of an asset as well. He didn't get roared, he didn't get you know, overawed by big games, so he was always very calm in sort of big match environments, and pressure didn't seem to get to him. So partially that sort of casual, playful attitude did help him. You know, you just have to remember the Europa League final. But yeah, he always came back after, you know, when he began pre-season, he was never in the best of shape. Maurizio Sarri famously used to say that he needed to play games to get fit because he didn't train very well. So it was actually, you know, playing him twice a week was what really got Hazard to the top level, because when he played in a match, he really pushed himself and did work hard for the team during the match. And so that's Eden Hazard, really, in a nutshell. And Mikel's words were probably, lazy is probably a bit of a harsh word to use, but I get the essence of what he's saying, and the essence of what he's saying is actually quite true from all the conversations I've had down the years in this job.
The next couple of games are crucial games for Chelsea, and I think we'll learn a huge amount about Frank Lampard's side currently over these next couple of games. On Saturday, it's a trip up to the Etihad to take on Manchester City in the Premier League. Then in midweek, in a week's time, it will be a trip to Valencia, which in theory could determine whether they get through that group or not. This is, people have been very complimentary of Frank Lampard's side over the last 6-7 weeks. They've gone on this winning run in the Premier League. But surely these next two games, we are going to get... I think you can see that this Chelsea side is a decent team at the moment, but there are still doubts about them against the top sides. These next two games, we're going to get a really kind of a really good picture of where they're currently at.
Yeah, there are doubts. I mean, Jose Mourinho is the one who cast the doubts on them. You know, it's been so positive around Chelsea, and Mourinho's been the one to sort of hit them with a bit of a wake-up call in the media. But, yeah, and Jody Morris didn't seem to like it, the assistant coach of Chelsea. He sort of took to Instagram and mocked Mourinho's quotes. But, yeah, the Man United games, they lost twice to Man United. They've lost twice to Liverpool. In the Champions League, they've been hit and miss. So, yeah, it's going to be a big week. I think that also, though, they are in great shape to sort of take on Man City. City themselves are struggling. And, you know, I think, you know, the last two times Chelsea played at the Etihad Stadium, they got hammered by Man City. So I'm not expecting that this time out. I'm expecting to see them being very competitive, potentially winning. And, yeah, it'll be a great game. I think Chelsea might even go in as slight favourites with the problem City have. Bernardo Silva's out as well of that game, as well as their sort of centre-back defensive crisis. So, yeah, Chelsea will be confident going into the Etihad and they will be going for the win. Now, the Champions League is another matter as well because that group is so finely poised. Three teams on the same number of points, away at Valencia, not easy. Chelsea's away form has been better than home form, but, yeah, I mean, that's going to be a hot environment to go into, and it's pretty much decisive for the group. If Chelsea lose that game, then they're pretty much out. You know, you could see Ajax and Valencia playing out a draw in their final game, and that would sort of condemn Chelsea to the Europa League where they don't want to be. So, yeah, I think that even if Chelsea do slip up in those kind of games, then I think they deserve a bit of, you know, leeway because it's still been a great season and it's still been beyond expectations. So, if another blip does come, then it's not beyond anyone's imaginations, in my opinion.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Nizar. That was Nizar Kinsella, Chelsea correspondent for Goal. Talking up Chelsea's hopes on Saturday, I think a lot of people will be expecting a reaction from City and winning at home on Saturday. But Nizar thinks with some of the injuries that the City currently have, he's fancying Chelsea to go up there. What a result that would be for Frank Lampard's side. I disagree. I think Manchester City will win at home quite comfortably. But if they do go up there and win, what a massive message that would send out to the rest of the Premier League, even though many would think it's unlikely. But obviously some big moments for some Chelsea players over the last few days. Mason Mount's first England goal yesterday. Tammy Abraham's first England goal on Thursday. As I said, 9 of the last 21 England debuts have been given out to players that have at some point or other been in the Chelsea Academy. Some for longer than others. The likes of Jack Cork are on that list. Maybe not quite part of the Chelsea youth system that's come up through the academy and then into the first team. But some good young players at Chelsea. But these next two games, we're going to find out a huge amount about where Chelsea are at. I think at the moment, they are looking good for top four, but that's it. They're not better than that. Them and Leicester are on a very similar playing field, but they are miles behind Liverpool and Manchester City. But they go to the Etihad on Saturday, and then the Champions League game against Valencia next week is massive. If they lose in Valencia, and remember they lost at home to Valencia, their Champions League hopes hang by a thread. And then, as Nizar was saying, they then could drop down into the Europa League, which would be utterly disastrous for Chelsea. But a big couple of games for Frank Lampard's side coming up. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. Obviously, one of the scorers from yesterday's game was Marcus Rashford. He seems to be getting back into a little bit of form, a couple of goals now on during this international break. How are Manchester United going to fare post this break? They've got Sheffield United coming up. We'll be talking all things Manchester United next.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. We've been talking all things Manchester United now, and I'm delighted to say we're joined by Dominic Booth, Manchester United writer for the Manchester Evening News. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Dominic. We've been talking about England a lot in this hour. One man's been in good form for England across both games, actually. Yesterday off the bench, the other day starting, scored a couple of goals, Marcus Rashford, after what was a patchy period for him earlier in the season where he looked as if he was struggling a little bit with injury, struggling for confidence. He now seems to have regained that and looks in good form for Manchester United pre the international break and during this international break.
Yeah, he seems to have found form. It seems to have been the fact that he's playing alongside people like Anthony Martial, obviously, for United, and Harry Kane for England. It seems to have given him a little bit of freedom. He seems to sort of be thriving on that role, just cutting inside of the left-hand wing. And I think the biggest change, as you said, is his confidence. He just looks to be, you know, completely flying at the moment, and everything he's doing seems to be going right, which is a good sign.
Do you think it is therefore as simple, Dom, as saying that obviously confidence has been restored for him, but simply the return of Anthony Martial, a player like that coming back into the Manchester United 11 after injury, that's helped him with his confidence and suddenly he's playing better because he's surrounded by better players?
I think there's a little bit of that, but I think that maybe we were being a little bit too harsh on him earlier in the season, and he was being asked to do a heck of a lot then. And he wasn't particularly playing too badly, I didn't think. I think what's happened is that there's been an upturn for his club. Obviously, his country's providing a great environment for him, surrounded by quality players. So I think it's, you know, the old adage is you don't get too high when you're doing well, you don't get too low when you're doing badly. And I think Rashford's done that, and he's now reaping the rewards.
Do you think we're any closer, Dominic? Because one of the big questions still surrounding Marcus Rashford, despite the fact we've seen him for the last 3 or 4 years now, what is his best position? Do you think we're any closer to establishing what that is? Because for England, it you would imagine if Harry Kane stays fit that Rashford isn't going to be starting through the middle, so he is going to have to start out wide. Do you think that over these next 6-12 months that everyone will be in a kind of in agreement as to what his best position is, or do you think that this debate is just only going to continue?
I don't know if it's a necessary debate. I think Rashford himself has said that he quite likes to be versatile. He likes to be able to play a few different positions. I think when he was a youngster, he played on the right-hand side quite a lot. And while that's not been his best position in the last couple of years, it's certainly one he can play, and he can also play through the middle or on the left. So, you know, it's good for players to be versatile. I don't think, you know, we should try and pinpoint him to one specific role. You know, if he's doing well on the left-hand side at the moment, then that's great. But I'm sure we'll see him in other positions in the future.
I saw some comments, Dominic, by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer with another young England player, Mason Greenwood, who obviously is involved in the youth setups, not quite yet in the full England setup. But Solskjaer has compared Greenwood's finishing to Robin van Persie, obviously a terrific striker in his day, both with Arsenal and Manchester United. Do you think that that's fair on a young player as young as Mason Greenwood is to be saying that sort of thing? Or do you think that that's a sign of how highly he is rated?
Well, it's definitely a sign of how high Solskjaer rates Greenwood. He's not shied away from talking up these young players in his squad before. You know, I think he compared James Garner, who's another young player at United, to Michael Carrick, saying he could be the next Michael Carrick. So Solskjaer's clearly... he's clearly saying something different to these young players behind the scenes. I don't think he would put the pressure on them directly. Maybe he gets drawn into these little media sound bites, which are obviously lapped up. So probably wouldn't read too much into that. I do highly rate Greenwood from what I've seen of him. I think he is a big talent. And you know what? These players get a lot of media attention anyway these days. I'm sure that they can handle these sort of comparisons and things like that.
Another of the young players at Manchester United currently is Tahith Chong. Now, he's had a contract at the end of the season. There's been a lot of to-ing and fro-ing as to whether he's going to sign the new contract. Juventus apparently are lining up a move for him. It seems like he's after quite a lot of money, which maybe in this modern era isn't really a surprise that young players are looking for the money. Do you think that this is kind of a ridiculous situation that Manchester United currently find themselves in, that a young player that hasn't really played a huge amount of football maybe thinks he's better than he is and is expecting a lot more than he should be doing at the age and of the lack of experience that he currently has?
Yeah, I think it's an issue with modern football, isn't it? I think we've seen it in a few situations. And like you say, Tahith Chong has not particularly broken into the United first team, or when he has been given a chance, he hasn't really made an impact. So United have got to make sure that they're strong in these sort of situations. You know, they've got to tell Chong what they want of him, and if he does emerge into the first team in the next few weeks and produces some performances, they go, well, there you go, you've earned a longer stay, you've earned a new contract. But at the moment, I think United have been backed into corners too often in contract negotiations in recent years, so that they really have to stand firm on this one.
Another player that's now moved on from Manchester United is Romelu Lukaku. And some interesting comments from Steve Walsh, the former director of football at Everton, who was suggesting that when Jose Mourinho signed him as the Manchester United manager, he was warned about signing Lukaku, saying that he was a big baby and perhaps he had behavioural issues. Do you think that's just a case of sour grapes? Now that's easy to say this a few years on. And looking at, obviously, back at the summer transfer window a few months on and now that he's obviously hit the ground running with Inter Milan, do you think the Manchester United hierarchy, the board, will be regretting allowing a player that scored, I think, 40 times in 75 appearances for Manchester United, allowing him to leave without bringing in a replacement?
I think it's the latter part, the not bringing in a replacement, which is the key bit.
you know, although you have to say United, when they've got their first choice front line at the moment, they look a more mobile, more dangerous unit without Lukaku. I think, so there was obviously a discord between Solskjaer and Lukaku, no matter what Lukaku said last week. I think he came out and said, you know, Solskjaer wants to keep me and there was no problem between us. I think it's better if we all just move on from this one, to be honest with you. I think, you know, Lukaku clearly wanted to go to Italy. He's doing well there. And I think United, while they should have signed a replacement, are probably a more cohesive unit without him, to be honest with you.
And just finally, Dominic, on the field, next up for Manchester United, a Sheffield United away on Sunday. United currently seventh in the table, 16 points. Sheffield United, what a start they've made, up in fifth on 17 points. How tough a game is this for Manchester United? And if they were to win, they would potentially go up into fifth place. And how would you say then, if that were the case after 13 games, how would you then view Manchester United's start to the season?
Well, on the game itself, I genuinely think it's probably one of the toughest tests United will face this season, going away to a really disciplined, organised Sheffield United team who are actually probably a little bit more than that. It's probably a little bit disrespectful to just say they're disciplined and organised. They're actually very good. They've got some very talented players and they're well managed. So if United can come through a test like that, and we've seen this season against teams like Sheffield United that they've come unstuck, it would be a big boost for Solskjaer. And I never thought United were particularly out of the top four race just because of the nature of the teams in the league this season beyond City and Liverpool. So, yeah, you never know. United seem to be quite a streaky team under Solskjaer, so they can really maybe hit a run and then close that gap.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Dominic. That was Dominic Booth, Manchester United writer for the Manchester Evening News. Obviously talking a little bit about Rashford, who took his goal really, really well yesterday. It was played through by Sterling into the penalty area. He took it first time, opened his body up and played it into the far corner. On that occasion, accuracy was the key, and he got it right. And he does seem to be back in form. When it was only 5-6 weeks ago that Rashford looked didn't look fit and looked like he was really struggling with confidence. The whole Tahith Chong situation is ridiculous. This is a player who's hardly played for Manchester United, and yet he seems to, maybe it's the Paul Pogba syndrome. He thinks he's suddenly better than Lionel Messi at the age of 19 and expects so much more than he deserves. Probably, and this is, as Dominic was suggesting, this is football nowadays, expecting far too much money at his age and expecting potentially to walk into maybe Juventus' team. I mean, how ridiculous is that? A player that doesn't get into Manchester United's team isn't exactly going to be walking into Juventus' team. A tough game for United on Sunday. Fifth beat seventh. I don't think many at the start of the season would have said after 12 games or predicted that Sheffield United would be in fifth place just after the November international break. But it's a damning indictment, really, of a lot of teams in the Premier League this season so far, that apart from the top four, no one has won more than four games out of 12. That is remarkable that only the top four, you look at City have won 8, Chelsea have won 8, Leicester also 8, Liverpool have won 11, then Sheffield United, Arsenal, United, Wolves, those next ones have won 4 or 3. I mean, how inconsistent a start to the season is that? But Sheffield United have proven a really stubborn side, and obviously form can really go out of the window, especially for promoted sides, but I don't think really there's any chance Sheffield United will get relegated. They could go through a bad patch and still have a bit of a safety net, so that's a tough game for United on Sunday at Bramall Lane, and that's a big test. United have, well, I mean, they haven't really started to get any form. You look at their last 5 games, 2 wins, 2 losses and a draw. It's not really the sort of getting back into form that some Manchester United fans are trying to portray. But that's a real test. But United could move up, in theory, into fifth place. Obviously, that's slightly relying upon Arsenal not picking up 3 points. But if United were to win at Sheffield United, they would leapfrog them. But there's still a big gap between themselves and the top four. Dominic suggesting there maybe top four's not over for Manchester United. I think it's a massive long shot. I don't see the likes of Chelsea and Leicester, who are the fancied sides. Obviously, it will be Liverpool and City competing for the top two, Leicester and Chelsea for third and fourth. I don't see United being able to bridge that gap. You may have a different view. If you want to share them with us, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. We'll be back after this.
Love Sport.
Obviously, a lot of international football currently going on. We were talking about England's win in Kosovo yesterday by 4-0, meaning England finished the group with 7 wins out of 8 and secure a position amongst the top 6 sides for next year's tournament. So, a good day for England in some ways, not necessarily massively in terms of the performance, but they are through, which is the all-important thing for Gareth Southgate's side. Just a rundown of the qualifiers so far. So we have Austria, Belgium, Croatia, Czech Republic, England, Finland, France, Germany, Holland, Italy, Poland, Portugal, Russia, Spain, Sweden, Turkey and Ukraine. There are 3 more places up for grabs from the qualifiers and a further 4 to progress from the playoffs, which will take place in March of next year. The draw for the 2020 finals tournament will take place in Bucharest on Saturday, November the 30th. So just under a couple of weeks away. Plenty of international football happening over the next couple of nights. A big night for the Republic of Ireland tonight. And there's been quite a lot of tension between the two sides. Interesting comments by Mick McCarthy suggesting that the Danes are perhaps not showing Ireland enough respect. The belief that the Danes think that they are better, I'd be inclined to say that's probably because Denmark are better than Ireland. That's probably why they think it. But Ireland will qualify if they beat Denmark at the Aviva Stadium tonight. Denmark just need to avoid defeat to qualify automatically, which would leave Ireland facing a 2-legged playoff against another third-place side. Looking at the Group D table as it stands, Denmark are top on 15 points. Switzerland are second on 14 points. Republic of Ireland are third on 12. Georgia have already played their 8 games. They're on 8 points. Gibraltar bottom on 0 points. Switzerland play Gibraltar, so we would imagine that'll be an easy 3 points for them. So the Republic of Ireland do need to make sure that they win tonight against Denmark, but there's the more pressure on them because they have to win, whereas for Denmark they know that they only have to that they need to just make sure that they avoid defeat. Obviously a few players that Premier League fans will know of in the form of Kasper Schmeichel and Christian Eriksen in that expected Denmark team tonight. So a bit of tension between the two. Mick McCarthy believing that the Danish side show or are showing Ireland a lack of respect and that they think that they are better. But maybe that's because they are better. So they're just going by facts. Then into tomorrow night's action. Northern Ireland make the trip over to take on Germany. And Michael O'Neill, who's obviously only recently taken over as the new Stoke manager, won his first game in charge there just before the international break by 4-2 away at managerless Barnsley. We'll be talking more about Barnsley in the next hour in the Championship fan show. He claims doubling up with Stoke and Northern Ireland will be dead easy. Interesting. I don't really get why you'd make a comment like that, because you're just setting yourself up for a fall making a comment like that. No doubt he made a good start to life as the Stoke manager, winning against Barnsley and taking them off the bottom of the table, but not exactly the greatest thing to do. Remember, obviously, they face Germany and Frankfurt in their final Group C qualifier tomorrow. They'll discover who they face in the playoffs when the draw is made in Bucharest on Friday. When it was announced that he was going to take over as the Stoke manager, he was always going to go back for these couple of games and also potentially the playoffs if they needed to. Now, their draw against the Netherlands the other night meant that Holland and Germany progressed automatically into the Euros, and Northern Ireland will have to come through the playoffs in March. So obviously Michael O'Neill will take charge of Stoke for the next few months, and then when it comes to that international break in March, he will then go back to manage Northern Ireland and whoever they play in that playoff to get to the Euros. But yeah, dead easy. I think if it was dead easy, I think more people would do it. And I think there's a good reason why there aren't lots of international managers that also manage a club side. Wales are in action tomorrow night. They beat Azerbaijan 2-0 on the weekend. And they take on Hungary tomorrow night. Only a win over Hungary in Cardiff will be enough for qualification. Aaron Ramsey is set to make his first international start in more than a year. So a boost for Ryan Giggs' side. Talking of Aaron Ramsey, if you remember back a few weeks ago when he nicked a goal off Cristiano Ronaldo on the line, the ball was rolling in and he took the goal off him. Well, Cristiano Ronaldo has done the same thing to Diogo Jota, which would have been his first goal for Portugal, and he nicked it off him. Nice of him. I mean, he'd have been probably pretty furious. I dread to think what he did to Aaron Ramsey in the dressing room after that game, especially as the other day when he was substituted by Maurizio Sarri didn't just walk off, he just left the stadium as a result of being substituted. Well, Ronaldo did it to Diogo Jota, so I think he owed him a massive apology. But that was Ronaldo's 99th international goal. He scored his 9th international hat-trick the other day and scored his 99th goal. I mean, ridiculous statistics, aren't they? And he says, he's even said he's been having to play through the injury barrier over the last few weeks. It's not bad when you can still score international hat-tricks when you're struggling with injury, is it? But Cristiano Ronaldo scoring his 99th goal. When will he manage to break the 100 mark? Also, Scotland are in action tomorrow night against Kazakhstan. A number of players have pulled out of Scottish international duty. So just a reminder of the games to come tonight and tomorrow night in Euro qualifying. In Group J, there are three fixtures tonight. Greece take on Finland. Italy are taking on Armenia. And Liechtenstein are taking on Bosnia and Bosnia-Herzegovina. In Group D, as I mentioned, a big game for the Republic of Ireland at the Aviva tonight. They take on Denmark, knowing only 3 points. Only a win against Denmark will secure qualification for the Euros, unless or else they will have to go through the playoffs. Denmark know they only need a point. Gibraltar take on Switzerland. So we'd imagine the Swiss will secure an easy win there. In Group F, Malta take on Norway, Spain take on Romania. Santi Cazorla scored his first international goal in 4 years the other day, so a pretty good moment for him. He's had a bit of a renaissance at Villarreal since he left Arsenal recently. Remember that unveiling, but the magician's unveiling when he was unveiled as a new signing for Villarreal. Sweden take on the Faroe Islands in the other game in Group F. And then into tomorrow night's action. I mentioned a few of the games. Group C, Northern Ireland against Germany. Northern Ireland know they will have to go through the playoffs in March. But still, they want to finish off the group in positive style. But a tough game away at Germany, who won quite comprehensively. If you haven't seen Toni Kroos' goal from the weekend, well worth a watch. The Netherlands take on Estonia. In Group E, Slovakia take on Azerbaijan. And we've already mentioned the game in Cardiff, where Wales know that they need all 3 points to secure qualification. They won 2-0 in Azerbaijan on the weekend. And it didn't seem that long ago that it was pretty unlikely that they would be qualifying, but they do still have a chance. In Group G, Latvia take on Austria. North Macedonia will play Israel, and Poland take on Slovenia. And in Group I, Scotland's qualifying campaign, which has been generally a pretty miserable one for them. They host Kazakhstan, the place they lost, I think, 3-0 earlier in the qualifying stages. Belgium, who won 4-1 against Russia. If you haven't seen, Didrik Boyata was wearing Michy Batshuayi's shirt on the weekend. I don't know whether that was just him being stupid, whether it's just him being thick generally, or just a mistake. I think probably more the former than the latter. But Belgium take on Cyprus. San Marino finished their campaign at home against Russia. So that's all of the action to come. Obviously, England have finished their qualification off in style yesterday with a 4-0 win, even though the performance wasn't great. And a number of the home nations, Republic of Ireland, a massive game against Denmark tonight, and then tomorrow night, Northern Ireland, Wales and Scotland all in action.
This is Love Sport.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.